But we're going to continue our study that we began last night as we entitled it Keys to Longevity. And the text I'm going to use for tonight is 3 John and verse 3, where it says, "Beloved, I wish above all things." Now that's a significant statement just of itself. "I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in" what? "In health, even as your soul prospereth." So we keep looking at the biblical evidence that God is interested in every aspect of our lives. He is interested in our health and our well-being. He's interested in our prosperity. Now, I don't believe that that necessarily means that we're all going to be millionaires. That's called prosperity theology. And I'm not sure I'm really into that, but I do believe that God will bless us as we make Him first. And we realize that, money is could be a good thing. Well, it's a pretty important thing sometimes, especially when you're hungry and you got bills to pay. It's a good thing to have, but there are other things of life that are important as well. The study we're looking at was a study done by Drs. Breslow and Balick in Alameda, California, as they studied 7,000 people for a period of 9 years looking at the 7 health questions. We looked at 3 of them last night, and we're going to continue on with number 4. Number 4 deals with the matter of eating between meals. And as I have pointed out probably too much, that whenever you look at studies, often you ladies just do not show up quite as strongly as us men, statistically. Which means you could be tempted to sit back and kind of tune this out and kind of think to yourself, I hope these guys are listening. But remember, once we cross that line and become postmenopausal women, then we begin to find that we've lost a certain advantage that we had. And then statistically, we begin to see some significant issues that develop health-wise. And so as we look at eating between meals, I mean, we can see it in the men. There is a statistical and a significant, as it looks at the mortality rate of those who are eating rarely between meals compared to those who are eating daily between meals. And we touched briefly on this last night, that there ought to be regularity in our eating patterns. We ought to be eating, by habit, at about the same time every day. We ought to set that. When we're eating irregularly through the day, and this is the pattern of our lives, and I know sometimes with the demands of life, there's enough irregularity to deal with, but regularity in our living habits are pretty vital to our health. And remember, there needs to be 5 to 6 hours between meals. We need to allow the digestive system to do its work and to finish it before we're dumping something else into it. And as I said last night, we condition our digestive system because we condition ourselves to interpret an empty stomach as hunger. It's all right for the stomach to be empty. It doesn't just have to constantly having something. But, some people go through this. They're constantly. And there are those who are suggesting that we ought to be eating many small little meals a day. I don't believe in that. I don't think there's good science for that. And the idea is to keep your glucose levels up. We are just been naturally created so that when we do eat, our glucose levels go up in our blood stream and then they come down. And that's normal. And that's the way that it really should be. And to constantly, seeking to keep the glue, it's not sensible. And it's not, some of you have heard that, haven't you? I was having this conversation with my son. He's heard this. He's into, weight-bearing exercises. He's buff. And, so we had a little conversation about this. I don't think I made a dent in his thinking about it, but anyway. And then when we eat between the meals, what we do, we lengthen the period of time that it takes for the digestive system to digest the previous meal. For instance, we've had a good breakfast, as we should have. I'm not going to ask how many of you had a good breakfast this morning, because I know that this is a pattern that can be difficult to change, but you can do it. And it's good for you. It's good for health. Remember, there's a 25% reduction of the mortality rate for those who eat breakfast compared to those who don't in general. 25% reduction. So that's pretty important. So we've had a good breakfast. But before we get to lunch, we snack. We have something to eat just to keep us going. And so what we do again, it takes longer for that breakfast to digest because we've added food into the system. And again, eating late at night and eating between meals at night is not really good for good, sound sleep. The digestive system should be pretty much done with its digestive process at the time that we retire. This is as a general, that's what we should do. And eating between meals, yeah, I know we're going to have refreshments tonight. I've been doing this for years, and every series, I struggle a little bit with this. I just don't know another way to deal with it, but I just call this the exception to the rule. Okay, this is not because we're recommending that we ought to do this every night, but, you know, there could be some exceptions to the rule. And so we're just healthier when we eat well. And when it comes to weight management, this is vital. How we eat at night is very key to this whole matter of weight management. And as I shared with you last night, having a good breakfast, the studies have shown eating a good breakfast is important to successful weight management. And by the way, you notice I didn't use the word diet. The word diet is a dirty word. It is, because a diet is something you go on, and when you reach your goals, you go off of. And when we come to weight control, we're talking about lifestyle changes, not something that we do temporarily. And they've also discovered, since I'm on the issue of weight control, and I deal with the issue of weight control because I've had to deal with that battle of the bulge. Okay? I don't know where you happen to bulge at when you're dealing with weight, but I know where my body tends to bulge at. And, but where was I on this? Talking about bulges, and then I get distracted. Anyway, the studies show that those who, that those who eat a good breakfast are going to be more successful in keeping their weight down than those who skip breakfast. Now, this is contrary to what we commonly think. I'm going to skip the meal. The thing is, we begin to pick up and make up for those calories as we progress through the day. And also they have discovered that if we lose 1 to 2 pounds a week, we will be more successful in keeping our weight off than if we have dramatic weight loss. Okay, so it's gradual. And since it is a lifestyle change that we're making, then that makes sense. That will tend to be the weight that we keep off. And then sleep, they look at the matter of sleep. How important do you think sleep would be? How would it rate up there? And, you know, we have millions in this country who are fighting insomnia. Maybe there are some of us who have been dealing with insomnia for years. We've just come to expect that this is the way that it is. And you can see it for those who are getting less than 6 hours of sleep. 15.6% of the group died during the course of the 9-year study. And even there was a uptick for those who are getting too much sleep. On the other end of it, we really need about 8 hours of sleep a night. And, I found myself getting by with 5 to 6 hours of sleep for years. And I remember my dad. I remember my dad when I was younger and he was in his midlife. I remember at night that about 8 o'clock he would be dozing in his easy chair. And I thought, well, that just comes with age. And I found that I was starting, you know, to doze a little bit at night. But then I made a concerted effort to make sure that I was getting at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. And I want to tell you, I didn't have that trouble anymore. Staying awake at night. I mean, staying awake before going to bed at night. Staying awake at night. No, that's not the point. But in the evening hours. So sleep is vital. It relates to the circadian rhythms. And by the way, as they looked at teenagers compared to the 1960s, teenagers today are averaging about 2 hours less sleep a night than they did back in the 60s. And so, you know, the whole media thing, computers, computer games, all of it. And the invention of artificial lighting has played into all of this. And you see, our brains pick up light or dark, and certain hormones are released when it gets dark, except when we have artificial light going, and that when the lights go out, then the body goes into sleep mode. And that's important, getting to bed at a decent time at night. I have to admit, I'm still working on that. I'm not really a night person, but I find myself up at 11 and a little bit longer, and it's something I'm working on. Ideally, I want to give myself plenty of time so I can get that 8 hours of sleep. So again, that's vitally important. What else can I share about this? The military has studied a lot on this matter of sleep deprivation. Of course they would study this, because when you're in a war, the bugle's not going to go off and say, okay, guys, lights out. And you're in the middle of a battle. Lights out. Go to bed. Get some sleep. No, they have to function, and function when they're in a sleep-deprived state. So they've done a lot of studies on this. There's actually, as you talk about sleep deprivation and not enough people getting sleep, there was a case that was reported some years ago of an airliner that took off in the East Coast, headed to L.A., came to a cruising altitude and set the autopilot. And one by one, the cockpit crew fell asleep. Crossed the continental United States, asleep. Crossed the western coast of the United States at altitude, asleep. About 2 hours over the Pacific Ocean. They didn't run out of fuel now, so I'm not going there with it. Somebody awakened and discovered what had happened. I think they probably all lost their jobs. And they turn around and they made for an extra long flight, So sleep deprivation affects the quality of life. We need rest. And when we're in a time and we're dealing with stress, as I was dealing with stress over this family issue some years ago, I tried to make sure that I guarded my sleep. I got into a stress management program. I'm in one anyway, just because I regularly exercise, but I upped my exercise. And I put in things that would help me to relax and to rest. And so when we're under a lot of pressure and stress and we need to be sure that we're doing some things. And I'll tell you, TV is not always the most, we think it's relaxing. Depends what we're watching, but, it doesn't always contribute to good stress management. And so from that period of time, some years ago, when I go to bed, I read a little bit. I have a book. I always have a book nearby, and I'm reading in my bed. And I turn on a radio to classical music. And so I'm listening to music and I'm coming down. I say my prayers, I'm in bed, I'm reading, and I'm coming down to the point of restfulness. They've done studies on classical music. Okay? Music can be, the right kind of music can be very relaxing. So anyway, we need good sleep. In 2001, 38% of the U.S., the population of the U.S. were getting 8 or more hours of sleep. In 2005, that had slipped down to 26%. That's not good. 26%. 5 to 6 hours is not enough. And if you have a sleep disorder, if you have insomnia, if you have a sleep apnea, let me recommend Mercy Medical Center Sleep Lab. It's close at hand. It's in Roseburg, Oregon. You can see all the information there. There is a phone number. Listen, if you've been putting up with this for years, you just think this is the way that it is. This is the way it's going to be for the rest of your life. Go to an expert and deal with the issue. Pulmonologist is the specialty. And get some help. They can reset your circadian rhythms and get you back to sleeping. Normally, don't just put up with it. It relates to the quality of life. And then the last one that we're going to be looking at is the issue of whether they asked them whether they were happy or not, which is a very subjective thing to ask, isn't it? And again, as we look at the women, we do see that there is a correlation. 6.8% of those who reported that they were very happy died during the course of the 9 years, compared to 10.8% for those who were unhappy. And as you look for the men, 10.3% died who were very happy during the course of the study, compared to 16% for those who were unhappy. So when we talk about this issue, we're talking about the mind-body relationship, the psychosomatic, the relationship between body and mind. And that works this way. From the mind, from the brain, emanates all of the nerves that emanate all through the body tissues. And so when we're stressed, when we're depressed, if we're a negative thinker, this all has a negative effect upon the physical organism. You see, as Christians, we ought to have an advantage, because we have a place to take our troubles to. It doesn't mean that we don't have troubles, but we have a place to take our troubles to. Prayer, our prayer life, our faith in the one that loves us can help us through many of the stressful things of life. And as I shared, I don't mean to keep talking about this, but, you know, I've been through other stressful things, but that's what got us through a very stressful time. You know, prayer was vital to that whole process. And so trusting God will help us, and it will help to calm us. Take Psalms. Oh, what were some of the Psalms I just loved to read? I took some of these promises of God's Word, and I pasted them up on my bathroom mirror. I saw them at the end of the night. Is it Psalm 90? Is that one of them? Anybody going through a really stressful time in your life right now, going through depression? I didn't prepare for this because I really would like to give you a few texts. What is it? Psalm 55, I think, is another one. Oh yeah, Psalm 91. Let me just share this just very quickly with you. Oh, this is one that really helped me in times of distress. It says, "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High." I would meditate on that, and I would pray about that, being under the shelter of the Almighty One. "Will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress." I can't tell you how much comfort I gained from that. "For it is he who delivers you from the snare of the trapper and from the deadly pestilence." I shared with you, it took about a year and a half, but God brought to us deliverance. Oh, how sweet it was. "He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you may seek refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and a bulwark, and you will not be afraid of the terror by night, or the arrow that flies by day, or the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, or the destruction that lays waste at noon. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not approach you. You will only look with your eyes. You will only see it." And it goes on. You know, find those kind of passages. They just give us so much hope and comfort. So it's by means of those nerves, they're the pathways, that our emotional health has a positive or negative effect upon the physical organism. But it's a two-way street. By means of those same pathways, the condition, our physical condition and health, has a corresponding effect upon the mind. That's what we're talking about here. That's why it shows up in the mortality rates. And it says in Proverbs 17, verse 22, "A joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones." And so, good mental health is vital. And if, again, you are, and usually some oftentimes is connected, when we're under stress and depression, we're not sleeping as we ought. And we ought to seek some help. And make sure that you don't overlook the spiritual element in all of this. It's important. But get some professional help.